officers, or I'm sorry, not the police officers, but the probation officers in this case, I think we would have a different argument that Hayes would be more applicable for. The other part of the issue here is that with regards to Hayes, is that the arrest in Hayes occurs before the police officers go into the residence. So in that particular case, the individual comes to the door, they arrest the individual outside of the trailer, I think it was, and as the person is being detained, he screams out, he yells out for his
Don,
that's right. Mm-hmm. And during that time period, as he is doing so, the police officers at some point go into the home saying, okay, now we're going to need to do a protective sweep of the home. What should have happened? They should have just waited for a warrant. You know, I mean, that's, there was no accident circumstances here that told anybody, any reasonable person looking at the circumstances, hey, you know what, they need to go into that trailer right now. And based upon that, I believe that that's how the court ruled with regard to that particular case.
Is there any need for this court to clarify the scope of a protective sweep in this case when they had their encounter with McCall? He was in the hallway. There were no weapons. I guess it gets to the function and purpose of a protective sweep. Is it necessary to do more once you've satisfied yourself that officer safety is addressed? The dog was placed in the bathroom. There were no weapons, at least present in the rooms in which they were in. Santos came out, didn't have a weapon, as far as I know, from this record. So is it necessary for this court to comment on the scope of a protective sweep? Or is that fact-driven in every case?
I think that, well, I think that the concept of the accident circumstances has to be in play. And in this case, it's not under Hayes. But more than that, though, I think we have an issue here with regards to when a person's on probation. What kind of scope of search of the remainder of the home is there? Now, for instance, if Ms. Nguyen was a girlfriend, relative, something along those lines, where it was a family home, she would have access to all these other different parts of the home. But when you have an individual who is there specifically as a tenant or someone who's renting out one of the homes, then at that point, what happens, I think, under this search clause for probation is that we should limit that. Because my understanding in the record with regard to these individuals is that they were walking in there excited to do something. They were there, they put on their protective gear, they came to the door with their guns drawn. They were not there, in essence, to do what exactly what these probation sort of searches are supposed to be doing, and that is to search specifically the probationer's room or residence and whatever common areas that are there. They wanted to do more than that. And the record is belied by that because they established surveillance, which, by the way, is unusual. This was the very first time that they had gone to the home. This was the very first time that they had actually done a wellness check or a search, you know, to just make sure that this was an appropriate place for this particular probationer to be. They didn't do any of that.
Would you agree with Mr. Beaumont's assertion that it appears the district court did suppress all the evidence, any and all evidence?
No.
No.
My understanding was is that it was the only the evidence that was found inside of Mr. McCall's bedroom that was suppressed.
Well, because the order is items discovered in plain view during the unlawful protective sweep must be suppressed. Furthermore, the evidence seized pursuant to the search warrant must also be suppressed because it was fruit of the poisonous tree resulting from an unlawful protective sweep. So my concern is that if the district court suppressed all of the evidence without articulating why suppress evidence in McCall's room, why suppress evidence in Wynn's room, why suppress evidence in common areas, all of which have different legal evaluations, right? That,
yes.
That we're kind of left with an order that doesn't really give us the ability to review that appropriately.
Well, I believe that the court can very easily remand with instructions to clarify the order. And it would have been, I guess, on both the state and myself to have clarified that particular order at the time it was articulated by the lower court. I was always under the impression that my focus was on Mr. McCall and not on Ms. Nguyen. And so based upon what I was hearing, I was narrowing that already to Mr. McCall, and I should have clarified that particular issue.
No, but I mean, if for instance, there's evidence found in the common areas that would be, you know, utilized in any kind of criminal prosecution, that might have a different evaluative process than something found in his bedroom.
Absolutely. Okay. And that's exactly right. And that is if the evidence, like, for instance, the firearm, for instance, it would have been Mr. McCall's, was found in the living room or the kitchen. Absolutely, I would not be able to have that argument.
Well, let's not speculate. Yeah. Was there any evidence found in the common area that was going to be used against the child?
No.
You're looking at Mr. Beaumont.
We got a nod and a shake. Mr. Beaumont can address that on his own.
I don't recall any.
The court suppressed items that were found in plain view as it relates to Mr. McCall, correct?
In his bedroom. Correct.
In plain view, because those were the items that were used in the warrant to bootstrap the entry into the other areas in Mr. McCall's room. Is that
yes,
correct?
Ma'am.
That's what the court suppressed. Items found in the closet, the shotgun shell. Is that correct?
Yes. And the reason why I have some hesitation is that there was some discussion of maybe some IDs or some documents that were not in Mr. McCall's name. They may have been found in the common area. But that's the only question that I had.
But my question was simply, none of that's in the order, right? The order is very generic.
That is correct, Your Honor, and that should have been clarified.
Okay. Other question I had, in regard to the letter that was received, let's assume that letter had credibility. Everything in the letter is true. Do you think the officers have a reasonable justification for doing a protective sweep?
No.
Why not?
Well, you know, just a barefaced letter making bald-faced allegations, I don't think is enough.
Why I said let's assume the letter has credibility.
Right. Okay. So
allegations are truthful and it's known going in. I mean, would they be justified then because the letter says there's illegal drug activity, there may be weapons, multiple people in there? Do you think in under that scenario, the police would have a reasonable justification if they went in to say, let me make sure nobody else is here before we start what we're doing?
The issue, I think, with the letter is that it was directed towards Ms. Flint. The comment was that Mr. McCall is an ex-felon. But I don't believe that the letter articulated that Mr. McCall is in possession of these firearms, that Mr. McCall is somehow doing illegal activity in his own home.
McCall wasn't even mentioned in the letter.
Correct. His name is in there as an ex-felon.
But not in terms of doing
anything illegal.
Participating in any criminality.
That is correct. And I think that's where the narrow focus of that letter ought to be is on the fact that it was towards the probationer in this case, Ms. Nguyen, and not necessarily towards Mr. McCall.
Okay.
Anything else you'd like to argue?
I'm a man of few words, Your Honor. I don't have anything else.
So the lesson to the students is a lawyer can cover their case without using too many words.
Yes, Your Honor, just like Abraham Lincoln. Gettysburg Address.
So. All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're done then?
I am done, Your Honor.
All right, sure. Mr. Beaumont.
And Justice Stiglitz, to answer your question from earlier, as to the first issue, adopting the majority view, of the different circuits, this issue keeps coming up as to probationary searches. Because probationary protective sweeps, because these officers are in a position where they're not there to make an arrest. They're not there to get a search warrant. They're not there to investigate. They're there to determine whether someone is on probation and violating probation. But they're not required to close their eyes to other criminal activity once they're in a lawful place that they're supposed to be. And they didn't hear.
But the question here is whether they're lawfully going into other people's bedrooms who are not on probation. Correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And as far as that issue goes, the sole exigent circumstance under Hayes is the issue of officer safety. And officer safety creates a reason to conduct these protective sweeps because they're only looking in places where someone might hide for a potential danger. They do it briefly, quickly, and they move on.
But as the officer testified, they do it in every case. So that goes away from it, because that would be the position that anytime there's a probation or if we walk in, we can search the entire home just for our safety, just quick. Is that the position? And is that lawful under the United States Constitution?
That's a case-by-case determination, Your Honor. I would submit that under Maryland versus Bowie, we have the framework to analyze whether their decisions to search any individual case, place, or reason can be articulated.
But in this case, they articulated that they do it every time. So doesn't that cut against there being specific articulable facts here? And shouldn't we credit the district court's finding in this regard?
I would not agree to that, because these probationary officers, again, are not there to determine whether there is some sort of crime going on. They're there to determine whether their probationer is violating their probation. And so they're already going into a place where they believe there may be some sort of danger to them. But here specifically, they had numerous indicia of danger to them specifically.
But can't anybody write an anonymous letter?
Yes, anyone can write an anonymous mischief. Letter. But it would be unreasonable to receive one of these kinds of letters and have any kind of information that they were able to verify at the scene and able to verify once they were in the home and not protect themselves. Having a majority or having a minority opinion where a arrest is required prior to a protective sweep puts these probation officers' lives at risk and creates a safe space for criminal activity in the homes of probationers.
So, counsel, I'm going to just separate those two really quickly. Whether an arrest is required, or strike that, requiring an arrest is a minority position at this point. Isn't that correct?
Prior to a protective sweep.
Yes. Okay. So that's one issue. Because the court held, may I continue to?
Yes.
The court held, in this case, the court found, I don't think the officers supported their sweep on as one matter. As a second matter, it said pretty much in any event, there was no arrest, therefore they couldn't sweep. Two separate issues, correct?
Yes.
And we agree that, that the court's position there was a minority position, and we haven't weighed in on that piece yet.
Correct.
Okay. So the question that we have to, the other question we have to decide is whether the court abused its discretion in making its findings about whether or not the officers, there was articulable facts to support the search.
Yes, and, okay. And that issue also goes into the abuse of discretion as far as minority opinion goes, because in this case, even if you were to say that there must be a prior arrest to justify a protective sweep under the circumstances, the court stated that there was the ability to get a search warrant. So the court, in its order, recognized that there was probable cause here. And the court said that there was no arrest at the scene. That's factually incorrect. Both of these defendants were arrested at the scene. And in fact, Ms. Nguyen was in lawful custody, and the court acknowledged that. So if we're going to have the requirement of an arrest that must exist prior to a protective sweep, why don't we count Ms. Nguyen being on probation as a lawful arrest or in custody?
So I wanted to clarify a factual dispute that you two had with regard to the scope of the suppression order by the district court as to evidence that was retrieved in the common area of the home.
Yes.
What evidence was retrieved in the common area of the home that the state intended to use against McCall in his prosecution?
To the best of my recollection, because there was quite a bit of evidence found, he was charged, both defendants were charged with either conspiracy or under barren leading, aiding, and abetting, and so on, possession of a financial forgery laboratory, possession of documents or IDs belonging to another, forgery, possession of firearms specifically as to Mr. McCall. These forged lab items were found in the living room. The IDs were found in the defendant's bedroom. The forgery evidence was found in the Ms. Nguyen's and I believe also Mr. McCall's vehicles. The forged lab equipment itself was throughout the house, mostly in the living room to the best of my recollection. But each and every one of the counts that were not the possession of a firearm by prohibited person from Mr. McCall was found outside of Mr. McCall's bedroom. The only evidence of any crimes that would have been charged were approximately 108 grams of meth in Mr. McCall's bedroom and the three firearms in Mr. McCall's bedroom. Everything else throughout the house was charged as to both co-defendants, and all of that evidence was obtained pursuant to the search warrant from the Financial Crimes Department, because these parole and probation officers called the financial crimes based on the forgery lab equipment that was found in the common areas. They did not call our gun unit. They did not call gangs. They did not call drugs. They called the Financial Crimes Forgery Laboratory to get the search warrant. So when those officers and their specific team came to execute that search warrant, they were there for the forgery lab equipment. So that search warrant containing all of that information found throughout the common areas in the house and the defendant's bedroom, all of that was suppressed with this order because we cannot extricate what was found in Mr. Mr. McCall's room from what was found in the common areas of the home that were subject to probation clause.
So, Mr. Sant, because I asked this question of your opponent, do you agree with the characterization of the evidence that was suppressed in the common area, or do you want to clarify that? Yes.
Your Honor, my recollection of the evidence that was found in the common area were, once again, like I represented to the court earlier, there were documents that were not in Mr. McCall's name that were found in the common area. The position is that it was not Mr. McCall's, but rather it was Ms. Wynn's, because the majority of the possession of personal identifications of others and so forth was actually found in Ms. Wynn's room, and I believe that she was on probation for the exact same issue.
Okay. We'll go back and look at that record.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. What is of interest to me in this area of questioning, as you know, on a motion to suppress, and then the state files their appeal, it's necessary for the state to show the court why it cannot prosecute the case without the suppressed evidence. And I think it's important to go back and look at that showing in the record. Okay, any other arguments then? I assume you've concluded your argument, Mr. Bowman. I think we're done. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sands. What I would request, if you don't mind, is I'd like you to introduce yourself first, Mr. Beaumont, and then Mr. Sands, to the students. You can turn around and face them and tell them a little bit about where you went to law school.